The barn had been one of the outbuildings of Waveden Manor. The rather undistinguished manor house itself had burned not long after the change. The floor below was loose box stabling, now holding their mounts, and the open space where lay a horse-powered threshing machine, remade to ancient patterns since the change, disassembled for maintenance after the recently completed harvest. Sir Nigel long ago acquired the soldier's ability to sleep whenever he had the opportunity, in circumstances far less comfortable than this. When he awoke, it was an hour past noon, and his hand was already on the wire and leather-wrapped hilt of his sword as he sat up. The bright metal came free of the sheath. Alan was already awake and armed. The bleak lines newly graven in his son's face made Nigel wince slightly. Losing one's mother was hard enough in the natural run of things. Then the younger Loring shook his head slightly and nodded towards the ladder. Hordle woke on his own a moment later, and he reached for the great hand and a half blade that lay beside him. Nigel looked through the fringe of hay. A girl was climbing the ladder with a large basket over one arm. She was the one he'd seen feeding the poultry, and was rather obviously the farmer's daughter, with skin the color of milky tea and dark hair that tumbled in loose curls beneath a kerchief. The girl's head came over the edge of the piled hay as she climbed the ladder and stepped off onto the lath flooring of the loft. The solemn eyes went a little wider as she saw the three longswords in the hands of the men who crouched there, and she gave a little eek. Then she smiled in delight as they slid the blades back into sheaths, obviously entranced with the secret importance of it all.
Hello, sir. I've brought you summer to dinner. My mum said I should stay and bring back the basket when you're finished. It's like Flora MacDonald and the Young Pretender.
Well, Archie MacDonald's been talking. I hope she doesn't expect me to wear a dress as a disguise. Thank you very much, my dear. What's your name?
He rose and then went down on one knee to take the wicker basket with its checked cloth cover.
Diana Bramble, Sir Nigel.
Probably named after Saint Diana.
The king's first wife had grown still more popular in retrospect, of course compared to Camilla, and still more to Queen Hallgerda. The girl's wondering eye went from his lined and weathered face to Alan's blonde, fine-featured handsomeness to Hordle's great red ham of a countenance.
And you're Little John, and Alan, aren't you?
The man may be trustworthy, but he hasn't much sense of security. Still, I suppose it's impossible to keep secrets in a place like this. Trying would simply make everyone curious.
Yes, Miss Bramble, we are.
Do you know the king, sir?
I do, young mistress. We've worked together since the change.
Is he really a bad man? I mean, he's the king.
No, he's the soul of Christian charity. And we're running away from him because we're a right wicked bunch of frighteners.
No, but he's been under a great deal of strain, and I'm afraid it's made him strange.
You mean he's gone raiding bunkers, like Archie's Uncle Willie? Uncle Willie talks to people who aren't there and cries a lot.
His Majesty's a bit strange this last little while, and he's made some bad decisions because there are people around him who tell him what he wants to hear instead of what's true.
But people like that there, wicked queen.
Nigel forbore comment. As far as he'd been able to tell, Queen Hallgerda was wicked, if being ruthlessly ambitious and power-hungry counted. And unlike some, he didn't think her admittedly rather stunning looks and undoubted charm made up for it. Doubtless if she'd stayed a junior clerical employee at a fish processing plant on Hyme off Iceland's west coast, it wouldn't have mattered much. With a kingdom to play for, it became a matter of life and death.
Dealing with our dear queen is the only thing that might tempt me to stay. No, not worth more destruction.
I'd like to see the court and Winchester. It must be beautiful.
Her eyes were wide as she thought of the metropolis. Nigel smiled. Winchester was the capital these days and had all of 10,000 people year-round, the largest city in the British Isles after Cork. That was just enough to keep the 18th-century core of the cathedral town from falling completely to ruin. To this child in her generation, whose horizons were bound by the farm and the enclosing wilderness, and the little hamlet of Wavendon to the west where she went to church on Sundays and school in the winter months, Winchester was what London had been to him, only far more distant and unattainable. A trip there a wistful daydream rather than an hour or two on a train or in a car.
Perhaps you will take a trip there one day.
Another solemn nod. Then she looked at him more closely than at Alan.
Dad says you're a hero for standing up to the king. But you don't look like a hero. You're too old, and you're going bald. You look like a daddy.
She pointed at the younger Loring.
He looks like a real hero. Right dreamy he is. Like the old pictures.
Hordle turned redder than ever as he suppressed a bellow of mirth. The younger Loring brushed hay from his tousled yellow hair and smoothed his mustache in furtive embarrassment.
Thank you, but he is my daddy, and he's far more of a hero than I. Let's have our dinner, shall we?
The basket contained a pair of farm-style loaves, stone ground, whole meal baked that morning, and still a little warm. Butter off the churn, two roasted chickens, their skin golden brown and crisp, potatoes done in their skins, and a salad of fresh greens and tomatoes. A seasonal delicacy nowadays. Diana Bramble said a brief grace. John Hordle converted his reach for a leg into a vague gesture and clasped his hands as she spoke, then compensated by spinning lurid tales of Alan Loring's heroism, mostly true if highly colored, until Diana gazed at the young man with a worshipfulness that doubtless made him hideously self-conscious.